Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Tuesday, May 26, 2015. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. 50.9-pound King was the winner in Petersburg's 34th annual Salmon Derby over the weekend. Scott Stafford had the largest salmon for the four-day event, and he wins first prize of $7,000. Second place is Madison Whitethorn with a 45.88-pounder. She wins $3,500 for second place. Third place and a cash prize of $2,500 goes to Stephanie Sell with a 45.4-pound fish. Fishing opened up Friday and ran through yesterday at 5 p.m. Successful anglers continued to weigh in fish right up to the deadline at 5 o'clock yesterday evening. Anglers weighed in a total of 362 kings for this year's competition. That's up from last year's haul of 325. It's also the highest total since the 2008 Derby. Prize ceremony is Thursday night at 7 o'clock at the AMB Hall. U.S. Forest Service has lifted restrictions on logging companies on the Tongass National Forest because of a drop in forest fire danger over the weekend. The agency issued a notice on Friday placing the Craig, Thorn Bay, and Wrangell Ranger districts on hoot owl restrictions. That meant loggers couldn't cut or yard trees, blast, or weld during the warmer hours of the day from noon to 8 p.m. The three districts are the only ones with active logging operations on the 17-million-acre forest. Ted Sandhofer, a timber sale contracting officer for the agency, said fire danger dropped over the weekend. Fire danger last week was very high, and the Forest Service reported two fires started by lightning strikes. Part of the region over the weekend saw some showers and relatively cooler weather. Elsewhere around Alaska, Alaska fire officials are monitoring a wildfire ignited over the holiday weekend by lightning. The Alaska Interagency Coordination Center reports the 70-mile fire began Sunday and by today had burned 1,250 acres, or just under 2 square miles. It's near Eagle in the interior of the state. The Coordination Center says the fire is moving northwest away from Eagle and no structures are immediately threatened. 20 people are assigned to that fire and are planning a burnout operation. Center reports 167 fires so far in the state, 13 are active, a total of just over 6,567 acres or 10 square miles have burned this year. And across the border in British Columbia, a wildfire that's been raging for 2 weeks south of Prince George has now been fully contained, but a secondary danger remains. Officials say the fire scorched 250 square kilometers and deeply burned into the forest floor, weakening root systems of trees and endangering anyone who travels in the area. Fire Information Officer Aaron Catherall says officials are asking recreational users to stay out of the burned forest area while danger trees are being removed. And conditions are improving for the central area of the British Columbia province, and the officials say it's still extremely dry in many parts of northern BC, especially the northeast corner of the province. One of two hot tubs on the Stikine River will be closed for renovations for 1 month this summer. A screened-in tub and adjacent changing room at Chief Shakes Hot Springs will be closed from July 15th through August 15th. People will still have full access to the outdoor tub. U.S. Forest Service maintains the site. Wrangell District Ranger Bob Dalrymple says the indoor tub will be roped off.
They are going to be repairing the foundation, which is a cement foundation that's deteriorated, and some of the support columns have started to deteriorate. Then we're going to be also doing some repairs on the roof.
Dalrymple says the Wrangell-Petersburg Cake Resource Advisory Committee suggested the renovations.
With our limited recreation budgets, we're really trying to put our funds, to maintain and increase the longevity of the facilities that we do have. And the hot springs, hot tubs up there, that's one of the probably the most popular spots on the district. It's real important for people.
The site includes two spring-fed hot tubs on the mainland about 30 miles northwest of Wrangell. The tubs can be accessed from the Stikine River. A large group of traveling performers and educators is visiting seven communities in southeast Alaska this summer. The new old-time Chautauqua will be holding parades, performances, and workshops, encouraging residents to join in. Here's more in this report. The new Old Time Chautauqua was founded in 1981 and is made up of volunteers and goes on tour once a year. This year's tour, made up of 55 performers and educators, will be going through Southeast Alaska in June and July. Paul McGeed, a coordinator for this year's tour, explains that a Chautauqua is only similar to a circus in that there are some performers who do circus-type acts.
It's more about education and entertainment kind of mixed together in this wonderful combo. It's actually a lot more like public radio or a TED Talk, where there's this great mix of, you know, great performers and great ideas.
And community gathering together.
That's Ann Gavzer, who serves as wrangler for the troupe.
One of the prime things I work on is our community service aspect, which is where we, it's a real important part of our mission to go and be able to entertain people who otherwise would not have the opportunity. They may not be able to leave their homes, so we go into senior homes. We work with homeless youth. We do lunch, free lunch programs. We go to Boys and Girls Clubs. We go to prisons, and so that's one of the pieces that I work on.
The visitors will be doing community service projects in the seven towns, in between parades, vaudeville-style performances, and workshops. People are encouraged to participate, and McGeed says the more a community puts into their visit, the more they'll get out.
So if you got kids who want to be in a parade, that's really fun. If the VFW wants to get in the parade, that's great. You know, anybody who has a community organization or for any reason wants to be, you know, in the parade to promote something or to promote community, we really encourage that.
The traveling group ranges in age from 1 to 74, and Gavzer says the events are family-friendly. The Chautauqua group features a 25-piece marching band. They plan on breaking out into smaller musical groups and welcome other musicians to join in. They'll even send the music in advance. McGeed says he'll be teaching workshops on subjects like how to fold things and history of the Chautauqua. Community members also are encouraged to lead their own sessions. McGeed says the Chautauqua movement dates back to 1874 and was predated by the practice of holding lyceums, or gatherings for lectures and classes, which started in 1826.
It's about the individual, a free man tilling his own earth, basically, is the idea. And that in order to be a good citizen, you have to be a well-educated citizen. So this whole movement basically started out of that idea. And so lyceums were events that were actually gatherings of people, just regular people who had regular jobs, who wanted to keep improving their education and their minds.
McGeed says in 1924 there were 1,000 traveling Chautauquas serving 40 million Americans, but the practice died out during the Great Depression.
Anyway, we founded our Chautauqua in 1981, so it's our 34th year. And we are the only circuit Chautauqua left in America. So if you want to see something super unique and have loads and loads and loads and loads of fun, you should come out and see us, because who knows when we'll be back. Last time was 23 years ago. So
organizers are seeking donations of food while they're in the seven communities to feed that large visiting group. And here in Petersburg, the Chautauqua plans to arrive June 28th. They'll be setting up camp at Sandy Beach Park. There's a community potluck with music at the park that afternoon at 3, and everyone's welcome to participate, to bring food, and play music with the group. Then on the 29th, that group hopes to perform at Mountain View Manor and work on a community service project at the park. A parade will be the following day on June 30th at 12:30 on Main Street, and anyone can take part. That will be followed by workshops and a performance at Wright Auditorium, and that show will benefit the high school music program. The visit to Petersburg is being sponsored by the Petersburg Indian Association, and anyone interested in helping out or putting on a workshop can contact the PIEA. The U.S. Forest Service says the most valuable product on the Tongass National Forest is now salmon. Ron Medel is the Fisheries Program Manager for the Tongass. He gave a statistics-packed presentation to the Sitka Chamber of Commerce earlier this month. Robert Woolsey has more on that story.
I won't keep you waiting in suspense. According to Medel, the Tongass produces 25% of all salmon swimming in the northeastern Pacific Ocean. Although Medel generated detailed charts and graphs showing the value of fish landed around the state, the breakdown of species that are being caught, and their relative values, this was the number that landed. 25% of all salmon in this part of the world are wild stocks produced in the thousands of streams and rivers of southeast Alaska. He's been studying this question since 2010.
We manage habitat. The Forest Service manages habitat. Fish and Game manages your populations, but this is fish and game numbers. Okay, and they're doing a darn good job of getting the numbers. By law, they have to get accurate numbers to set their management goals. Okay, their escapement goals. They need the numbers. They need to know what's coming from the transboundary rivers, the Tachihini, the Taku, the Stikine. They need to know what are the contributions from these rivers. And I need to know what they are so I can tease them out. Those aren't Tongass fish. And that includes the fish sweeping by from Oregon, Juan, Washington. Their own hatcheries.
Metal has targeted his work exclusively on wild salmon. Southeast 19 hatcheries produce millions of salmon, especially chum, but he doesn't count these as Tongass fish. And of the most valuable fish in Southeast, king salmon, only 5% were produced in the forest. The species pulling most of the statistical weight is pink salmon. Metal says 95% of all pink salmon in the region are wild. This is why the Forest Service has put more of its energy lately into
restoration. We want to make sure every fish can get up every crossing. And we do have some larger restoration projects going around the forest. Relatively small because in terms of scope of the forest, because our systems are fairly intact. And we have to be very careful of where we're putting the public dollar with our project works.
Metal told the chamber that the Forest Service was willing to prioritize and plan restoration projects, but the agency was reluctant to ask the public to spend money on actual restoration, preferring instead to approach partners like Trout Unlimited for funding. This prompted some pushback from the audience.
You damaged it, you fix it.
This is salmon troller Eric Jordan. He suggested that the need for restoration was the result of logging directed by the Forest Service.
Yes, we did do a lot.
Right. And so my position is that the Forest Service is part of our government. The public should be helping restore it. Or actually, my personal position is they should restore it as quickly as possible, and we should make a huge investment in it because, I mean, the figures you have here and the figures I read, it's $1 billion a year industry in Southeast Alaska.
Metal responded that Southeast's staggering fish production, even with some compromised habitat, created a bureaucratic dilemma. Most of the Forest Service's restoration funding was targeted at Region 6, the Pacific Northwest, where some salmon runs are listed as threatened or endangered. Nevertheless, he was excited about the projects that had been done so far, like the Harris River on Prince of Wales Island, which showed improved runs almost immediately. What other creature reflects how well we treat the land? He asked. It's salmon. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Petersburg High School's boys track and field team took first in the region for 1A, 2A, and 3A schools, while the girls team finished second place behind Sitka over the weekend. Two PHS athletes, River Quitsland and Isabel Eath, were named male and female outstanding athlete of the regional meet for the smaller schools. Quitsland, a senior, won the 800, 1600, and 3200 meter runs, and he was on the winning 4x400 relay team. And Eath, a sophomore, won the 100 and 300 hurdles along with the long jump and triple jump. In all, 12 students qualified for the state meet in 26 events, and I spoke with Coach Brad Taylor about the meet. Better than expectations, or about what you hoped for your team, or what?
You know, it was exactly kind of where I wanted the kids to be, but it happened so differently on the track. The kids performed so well, and I guarantee you that Sitka was... They were gunning for us. They had things in place, but the way the kids performed, we actually picked up a few extra points in some areas that I did not see coming. So that was really nice for our kids.
Okay, let's go through some of the highlights. Do you continue to set records, school or regional records?
We did. We had a really, really good meet for those particular things. Evan Marsh, he was able to set a new school record in the shot put. Isabel Eath had a Region 5 long jump record that held for over 12 years, and she was able to break that record with a jump of 16.11¾, and that lasted for about a half an hour. And then Naomi Welling in the 4A, she was able to jump just about an inch and a half farther than Isabel. And another school record that was broken way back with Ava Madalyn had set a school record when she was a freshman with a triple jump of 34 feet 11.5 inches, and Isabel on her last jump busted a huge jump and she jumped 35 feet 5 inches, so which that qualifies her as the number one triple jumper in the state, as well as the number one long jumper in the state, and also the 100 hurdles and the 300 hurdles. She's leading the field in all four of her event.
All right, so that puts some pressure on her too, I guess. So.
It does. But you know, she performs well under pressure. We have Ben Zarlingo is also seated first in the discus at the state meet, and we have River, who is seated second. Our 4x4 team is seated second, and we have a number of thirds and fourths as well.
What were the most exciting moments for you as a coach from this past weekend?
You know, the whole meet was exciting in itself, the way that it kind of unfolded. We had some great performances. Kids stepped up, and, you know, of course, that Region 5 record was pretty cool, and also that Isabel's triple jump. But, you know, we had performances across the board in every event where kids just did outstanding. I could not be happier. One of the things that I was looking at here is we took the 1 and 2 spot in the 100 hurdles for girls, 1, 2, and 3 spots in the 110 hurdles for the boys. Our shot put and our discus, we were both 1 and 2 in there. Triple jump, we were 1, 2. High jump, we were 1, 2. We had some really, really strong performances in a lot of the events.
Yeah, and you're heading up to Anchorage for the state meet, and what's your mindset going into this meet with either team?
Well, we're going to try to rest a little bit. Kids are pretty tired. You know, these kids, it's kind of a mindset change over the last couple of years to watch Isabel go in there and take first place at state. Now these kids expect to do well. You know, it's one of those things where they want to go and they want to perform very, very well. It's not that deer in the headlight look anymore. Those kids are going, and they're going for first place.
Anything else from this past weekend we should mention?
Well, it was an interesting meet for our girls. We tried to get things worked out where, you know, we had a pretty good shot at things, and Sitka came in. We didn't have any high jumpers, and they took 1, 2, and 3 and put us 24 points behind. But we crawled back and we made a really good meet out of it. And they had almost double our participants. So those little 10 girls did an amazing feat when compared to, you know, almost the 20 that Sitka had. So I was very proud of them. And then of course the boys did just an outstanding job and just came through under pressure.
And the results from that meet, Axel Vides took first place in the region for the high jump and second in the 100-meter dash. Kaylee Eddy placed second and qualified for state in the triple jump. Ethan Cummins took first in the triple jump, and Evan Marsh and Abel Albach took first and second in the shot put, while Marsh took second in the discus. And Billy Ware was second in the high jump, and Casey Bell second in the 110 hurdles. State meet is this weekend in Anchorage. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vignicki. Coming up on KFSK, Street Beat Music with Ross Nanook III. And at 2:30, it's KFSK's Sideline Sports, The High Country, 2:40 with Dave Israelson. And at 4 o'clock, All Things Considered with local news and updated weather at 4:30. Alaska News Nightly on at 6 o'clock, followed by the Writer's Almanac at 6:30, and Radio Reader at 6:35. Ebtide Music at 7:05 tonight with Steve Berry, your host, and at 9 o'clock, the Thistle and Shamrock, followed by Radio Free Petersburg at 10 o'clock, Kyle Clayton, your host for that show. Coming up next, weather and messages.